Informed Dissent, the intersection of healthcare and politics, with Dr. Jeff Barkey, board-certified primary care physician, and Dr. Mark McDonald, board-certified child, adolescent, and adult psychiatrist.
Well, Mark, welcome to another edition of Informed Dissent. Great to be with you.
Glad to be back.
Today, we've got a phenomenal guest. We love bringing guests on so you can hear from people that maybe you've read about in the news or peripherally heard about, but you get to hear directly from them. And that is Dr. Joseph Ladapo, MD, PhD. Joe is the Surgeon General of the great state of Florida. And he's also a professor at the University of Florida College of Medicine. Dr. Ladapo received his MD from, wait for it, Harvard Medical School, and a PhD in public health policy, also from Harvard Graduate School of Arts and Sciences. He worked as an associate professor of general internal medicine and health policy researcher at UCLA Geffen School of Medicine. He currently lives in Tampa, Florida with his wife and children. And Joe's got a new book out, and we're going to talk a little bit about this book, and it's called Transcend Fear, A Blueprint for Mindful Leadership in Public Health. And I'll read you a little bit about his book. Florida Surgeon General Joseph Ladapo shares an inspiring story of how he came to be who he is. After experiencing abuse as a child, Dr. Ladapo was incapable of connecting emotionally with other people. He was disassociated from virtually everything in his life and numbly powered through college, medical school, and residency to become a doctor and university professor. It wasn't until he fell in love with his wife that he was forced to come face to face with enormous emotional and spiritual disruption caused by his deeply buried trauma. Just before the pandemic, Dr. Ladapo worked with a former Navy SEAL, can't wait to hear about that, who used a mix of ancient disciplines and modern techniques to help free himself from this trauma and subsequently his fear. Well, Joe, great to be with you, and thank you for sharing your life story in this book. I know it's been very revealing and uplifting, I guess, in some ways. So tell us why you wrote this book.
Jeff, Mark, Dr. Bark, Dr. McDonald, thank you guys for having me on. I know we tried to do this before, and I wanted to do it, but for reasons that we discussed separately, I wasn't able to do it. So I'm happy to be chatting with you guys because you guys are my homies, and thanks for sharing information about my book also. I wrote it to kind of talk about public health leadership and give some of the background to, you know, kind of not only the recent background to how I became so fortunate as to be in the role that I am in now, but also the background before that, really with the hope of helping other people who might be interested in helping themselves, you know, potentially find a path that makes that possible in a really robust way.
And have you found that to be the case? Have people reached out, people that have had abuse in their life and that they see your book as a path forward?
Some people have reached out, actually. And, you know, I mean, for me, it just so happened that, you know, I had an experience. I didn't even sort of realize how traumatic it was in terms of the effect it had on me when I was, like four years old or so. But that's, and everyone responds to, you know, different types of assaults, if you will, because trauma essentially is kind of a spiritual assault. Obviously, it can be physical and emotional, but that's a big piece of it in terms of how it affects the being. But even just for, you know, it's just part of kind of the stress load, and it is a very acute type of stress. But the chronic types of stress that we experience also lead to, you know, sort of, they also have effects on our being and how we show up in the world. And you know, so I personally kind of had an experience that put me on a path that eventually would get me to someone who was able to help me. but even the other things along the path in terms of the daily stresses that we pick up every day are also part of what shape our being and how we show up in the world.
Tell me about this Navy SEAL that entered your life and helped you.
Well, his name's Christopher Maher. He actually has a book named Free for Life, and his book is about, you know, it's not like, you know, so I've read books, like I've read books about negotiation or, you know, kind of other self-improvement books over the years. And in those books, the author tries to give you tools to help you be able to address whatever it is you're trying to address. But it's not that. Instead, what it is, and I didn't know it at the time. I mean, all that was happening at that time was that my wife was at the end of her rope. You know, I love her and I loved her so much, but I was just kind of sure, on the outside, things look good, you know, Harvard and professor and all that jazz. But on the inside, in my, you know, most intimate personal relationships with, you know, my wife and my kids, things were really, honestly, they were terrible. And it wasn't because I certainly was trying to do as well as I could, but you can't outthink yourself out of some challenges, some injuries, some things just need to be addressed in a way that is kind of more definitive. So, you know, so my wife had, she had sent me to therapists over the years and they'd all helped some, but it was really like, ultimately it was like trying to pitch water out of the ocean. It just wasn't really effective. And what do I mean? I mean, I should probably share more about how I was showing up or what I was struggling with. So I have had just kind of lived in essentially a state of fear and kind of frightfulness for most of my life. And, you know, I look like I'm functioning well, and sure, on a professional level, I was functioning well, but inside I was essentially frightful and terrified of just everything, like everything professionally, everything personally, money, you know, social events, attention, everything. And that was wearing on my wife. So, and she eventually, you know, she eventually found Christopher Maher and she said, you know, Joe, I think this guy can help you.
Healing from trauma obviously is an ongoing process. It's not like a cut that heals and you no longer see it. So you mentioned ancient disciplines that this Navy SEAL used. What were some of those?
You know, so when my wife sent me to him, you know, I spoke with him and it was like expensive and I wanted help, but I kind of was trying to find a way that was less painful, both financially and whatever else. And you know, I was told to read his book. You know, he was like, oh, read my book before I work with you. And so I read his book. And in this book, he describes his life experience and he describes, you know, some of the methods he uses and in his journey to get there. And when I read it, I got the feeling that, okay, this guy knows what he's talking about. I don't understand everything. Much of it is mystical, but he seems to know what he's talking about. And so I went to work with him. I showed up. He was in Marina Del Rey in our old neighborhood in Los Angeles. And basically, so what Christopher, like, what he tries to describe in his book is how what is happening in people's lives in terms of their, he calls it lifetime accumulated stress. So what's happening in people's lives is in their bodies, and what's in your body is in your life. And he says that a lot in the book. And what that, and something else he says is that for people to to get free of these things, you can't do it with your mind, because the mind, using his words here, he says, the mind will tell 1,000 lies, but the body never lies. So what's happening in your life is in your body, and what's happening in your body is in your life. And, you know, I was reading all this and, you know, like, didn't really know what it meant. Now I know what it means, having worked with him. So when I went to, the first day I worked with him, just during the week, he uses different techniques, as I mentioned. So a lot of it is based on Chinese medicine and meridian theory. And again, I would never have been able to have this conversation before I worked with him, but having worked with him, I have a little bit more insight, although it's still way beyond my ability to fully comprehend. That's just how it is. But so a major part of it is this idea of this Chinese meridian theory. And the idea here is that, you know, there's qi and there's flow through your body, through your meridians. And, you know, and when a couple things, when you have pain in a part of your ear, in your body, there's no flow there. And for that, he says something like, you know, where there's pain, there's no flow. Where there's no flow, pain is sure to come. And one of the techniques he uses is called Mao Xing, and it's Chinese. And the idea here is that you lay down, and he mashes on the back of your thighs. The reason he does that is because one of the most, the most powerful meridian sort of runs through your thighs, and it has access to aspects of your physical, emotional, mental, and spiritual well-being, more so than other meridians. And so, you know, I laid down. I didn't know any of this as I was. I didn't comprehend any of this while I was working with him, but I was, you know, I was laying down. And initially it feels intensely painful, like it's super painful. And eventually it sort of becomes neutral. And eventually it can even be pleasurable. And I actually eventually got to the point where it's pleasurable. And the wonderful thing about this is through that process, so he's actually, you know, to use his words, stripping away layers of lifetime accumulated stress. And as you strip that away, you have more flow, and you show up brighter because you are more of who you actually are, instead of, you know, holding that stress, that daily stress, whatever traumatic experiences, all that stuff in your body. And I know it sounds, I mean, you know, we didn't learn this in medical school, but you know, I had the experience, and I had tons of stuff, and I've shared a little bit of it, you know, in some interviews, and there's some stuff that's too wild to share, you know, and like in public, more like dinner conversation. Right. But, you know, I mean, I basically, at the end of the 5 days, I worked with him for 5 days right before the pandemic. Thank God. But at the end of the 5 days, honestly, it's the closest thing to a miracle I've ever experienced.
Are you still working with him?
I still work with Christopher, and it's not like I don't. So one of the great things about the work is that when something's gone, it's gone forever. So it's like, the work I do with Christopher, I mean, I work with him once a year now. And I do it to get to higher levels of being and performance, not to like prevent myself from falling, because it's not possible. Like once it's gone forever.
It sounds like you really found a path to help you, and that's fantastic. And your book, I know, is a lot about this. So what's your message to survivors of trauma? And is your book a path that can perhaps help them find a way forward to get over their trauma?
I think for some people it may be. I mean, I think that, you know, one of the things, obviously I'm a pretty unlikely candidate for to be a, you know, sort of a diplomat for, you know, meridian theory and Chinese medicine and all this other stuff that I don't fully understand. But, you know, considering my very traditional background in like Western medicine and all that jazz, but, you know, but it was certainly real for me. And Christopher's actually worked with thousands of people and, you know, and just delivers these amazing results because we kind of all have the same blueprint in terms of how we sort of process stress and how it affects our different parts of our body and meridians and the flow of chi. So I think that for people for whom that resonates with and for whom, you know, like getting free of something is something they want to do, because it's not everyone wants that. You know, some people may not like how things are, but they don't necessarily want to change them. That's actually pretty common. As you know, just from life experience and working with people. So, but for, I think for people for whom, you know, the words and the message resonate and who want that, who want freedom from like whatever it is that's kind of holding them back or confining them, you know, I think that there might be an avenue. People have contacted me and, you know, said, oh, what's the name of the book? Or, oh, what's the name of the guy? And I pass on the information. And, I mean, for me, you know, it's, you know, and I said it's the closest thing to a miracle I've ever experienced. And I was like complaining about the cost and stuff, but having now on the other side of it, I mean, if I had to do it again and it cost every single penny that I have, I wouldn't even blink an eye, because that's just how invaluable like freedom is. And not carrying around all the junk and crap that we accumulate over our lifetime.
Speaking of freedom, you know, really our country and the world for that matter has been through a significant trauma over the last couple of years that you've been witness to and part of. And you kind of parallel your own fear and trauma to what's gone on during the pandemic.
You know, you look at this, it what happened, and, you know, I mean, one of the, you know, how do you keep that kind of thing? Well, why does that kind of thing happen, right? Where people do things that they don't agree with, but they go along with. People agree to do things that violate, you know, their principles and their beliefs and their instincts. And doctors and scientists who have training in like evaluating data and science choose to go along with something, not even when they know it's wrong or incorrect or not based in science. And not, I mean, there were some scientists and doctors, many who, at least from what I could tell, genuinely, well, actually that's not true, not genuinely believed what was being pushed from the CDC, but went along with it in a very genuine way. We'll come back to that. We can come back to that in a moment. But, you know, you can't get away with those things if people aren't afraid. You know, if people are not afraid to speak up, if people think it's more important to have their integrity than to, like, be popular or not have, you know, friends or their boss or neighbors say, you know, mean things about them. When people think those things are more, you know, those virtues are more important, you can't get away with this crap. And for the doctors who kind of went along, I mean, I don't know about you, but I felt like looking at some of the interviews of the doctors who were clamoring for, like, you know, 8 masks forever and, you know, everyone's staying at home, which obviously defies common sense in terms of good health, and these other stupid policies or the masks on the kids. I mean, I think part of that was individuals who, you know, basically there was something missing in their lives, maybe a sense of significance. And now being able to kind of tell people what to do and, you know, get attention from interviews and things like that was this source of like something that they felt was filling the hole. It turns out that kind of hole is bottomless. Like you can never fill that hole by putting stuff in it. So, you know, that kind of hole has to be sealed. So I think that was part of it for them. But anyway, the point is that when folks are kind of in alignment with, you know, their best selves and not feeling, you know, feelings of inadequacy or fear or insignificance or whatever.
Like, so Joe, you think these politicians and many of the unelected healthcare bureaucrats were making such decisions because they were missing something in their own life, and these decisions were often made based on fear?
The scientists, many of them, I do think. I mean, some of them actually believe this stuff because it aligned with their political outlook, which is fine. Like if that's your political outlook, but some of them, I think, you know, didn't really believe it. They just like kind of the moment that they were in. The politicians, you know, politicians are interesting. And so, I mean, a lot of politicians, Governor DeSantis excluded, which is part of the reason so many people admire him and like him, because he's not part of this mold. But a lot of politicians their self-interest is sort of above all, and their self-interest is often lies in power and, you know, the accumulation of it and the accumulation of more of it. And so when that's what you're going for, when it's not virtue but like accumulation of power, it's impossible to have a clear moral and ethical compass, which of course we in the American Frontline Doctors did. I mean, you know, that wasn't about power or, you know, or fame or anything else. I mean, clearly it was really the only group that I affiliated with during the pandemic. And the reason, and, you know, we're kind of sort of this odd bunch, but the reason is because it was very clear that it was integrity was the binding force in members of the group.
You freed yourself from fear, and obviously freedom from fear is a huge topic in my life professionally and personally. I even wrote a book about it last week. You were able to make decisions and implement policies, I assume, based upon what you just said and what you wrote in your book, because you were no longer captured by fear. You've implied in your book summary and some of the thesis of your book and just now that a lot of the decisions that even the politicians were making, obviously people following them were afraid, but the politicians themselves, healthcare officials, policymakers, that they were driven by their own personal fear. My observations have been that most of the policy-based decisions were not driven by fear, but actually by ignorance and corruption. How do you feel and how do you see things from your position within the system? Do you believe now, looking back on it, that fear was a primary driver for the policy makers, not just the followers, but the makers? Or do you think there was something less psychological and more basic that drove this horrible national policy, which would be, as I said, perhaps ignorance and corruption?
Oh, I may have misspoken then. I apologize. Oh, I totally agree with you, Mark. And, you know, I mean, yes, there's a spectrum, but you know, there was more fear. But I think that in the background was corruption. I think, you know, sort of setting the stage for the type of environment where you could have, you know, you could impose draconian policies and people would accept them and not protest and kind of go along with them. And that's corruption in the background. As things went on, right, you know, as we got to the point where, you know, like the tragic killing of George Floyd. Oh, pardon me. Do I have his name right? I hope I have his name right.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah. So as things went on and the tragic killing of George Floyd, you know, that was, I would say, somewhere around there was when things became ultra political, which means ultra agenda, which is corruption. And yes, there's still fear, but, you know, people knew in the back of their minds that, you know, life still had to go on, And, but they wanted it to, you know, they wanted it to, many of the political leaders, health officials wanted it to go on in the way that they thought life should look like, right? And, you know, it just so turned out that that model of, like, you know, human rights take a second seat to whatever, you know, the leaders think is most important. Your individual rights are not as important. We get to say when the lights go on and turn and go off. That, I mean, that was abject corruption. When the politicians were vacationing in Florida or in other, you know, Mexico and other places where they were caught when they were busy locking down their states. I mean, that's clearly corruption. And frankly, that's politics.
You started off at UCLA and we met each other through America's Frontline Doctors. We all got attacked, you as well, ostracized, called names, you're a quack, et cetera. Little did they know that you had an MD from Harvard as well as a PhD, but that's besides the point. And then eventually you got the call from Governor DeSantis to come on board and help run healthcare policy there. Tell us about that transition and how that happened.
Man, quack is probably the nicest thing I've been called. I don't know about you. I've been called a lot. colorful adjectives and nouns. So yeah, man. So, you know, things at UCLA were kind of going downhill. Not even kind of, they were going downhill. My wife was completely fed up with them. She was probably telling me to leave there at least weekly, if not more frequently. And I had, you know, I had NIH grants and the research was going well. And so I was kind of sticking it, you know, I just didn't see, and I was tenured. So I didn't see a lot of upside to leaving, even though they were, you know, basically they'd like ostracized me and there apparently, I mean, I didn't even know half of the stuff that was happening, but there was a lot of sort of nasty communications and sort of nasty stuff on social media from like physician colleagues, you know. Some people had left my research teams also, which was another kind of silly thing that I had to deal with. So then one day, we had just moved to a house that we were renting about a month earlier. So then one day out of we were selling our condo in Los Angeles because we were going to homeschool because, you know, LA County, you know, brilliantly wanted to put the mask on the kids and do all the stupid weekly testing or daily testing or whatever. So we were going to homeschool and we were fortunate enough to find the place with the backyard just to kind of make everything easier for our three boys. So one day, you know, I'm like walking to the mailbox and I get a call from, and I'd gotten an email before and I wrote back and I get a call from the chief of staff, Adrian Lucas at that time for Governor DeSantis. And he picks up, you know, we talk and he basically is saying, hey, you know, we need a new Surgeon General. You know, I don't think you're going to go for it because I know you're settled at UCLA and you're tenured and this, that, and the other thing. And, you know, but hey, you know, we just want to call to ask, but I know you're going to say no. And I was like, you know, just wait, Adrian, let me talk to my wife, you know, let me check in with her. And my wife is our spiritual center for our family. And, you know, so my wife wasn't home at the time. So, you know, she gets home and I'm like, hey, honey, well, you know, honey, I got a call from, you know, from Governor DeSantis's office. And I was like, you know, honey, they want me to be their new Surgeon General. And she like whips around and she's like, really? And she was like, you should take it. And I was like, whoa. I mean, I was not expecting that reaction.
And, we're going to Disney World.
Yeah, exactly, man. And so he kind of, I was like, and she, and then I was like, oh, you're right. I should take it, honey. And so we started our little journey to make our way to Florida. I mean, I interviewed with the governor, I think the day after or something like that. And I think maybe the day after that, they offered me the position. And then we figured out how to get out of the house and get over to Florida.
Absolutely.
Do you think you wouldn't have accepted that offer had you still been living in fear?
Oh, gosh. Well, I wouldn't have even gotten that offer because there was no way. Because, you know, I wrote a bunch of articles during the pandemic. And then, you know, it was part of how I kind of became defined during the pandemic, just as you guys. And I would never have had the clarity of thought. I would never have had the freedom of like spirit and soul and mind to write those articles. It wouldn't have been impossible. The phone would have never rung. I would never have joined you guys. I definitely would have been too scared to do that, you know, to put my neck out. And I could never have done any of those things. I'd have been a little quiet guy going along with stuff and hating it, because I would have hated it still. But I was just kind of gone along with stuff and still being.
So is it fair to say then, Joe, that by overcoming your fear and taking risks, you didn't actually lose anything? You gained something very important that you didn't even have access to before.
Absolutely. That is absolutely the case. That's absolutely the case.
This is something that I want everyone to really listen to very carefully and let it sink in. Because many times the hesitancy people have to taking risks because they're afraid is that they're going to lose. They look at what they're going to miss: money, relationships, status, a job. They only see the cost. But it's really important to hear from people like you and stories like yours that show that the reality is actually more often far, far the opposite. That what you have to gain from letting go of your fear is increased professional opportunity, improved relationship with your wife and children, better relationships with friends and colleagues. All of this came to you because you stopped living in that box that you had been locking yourself up in. And it's not a theoretical argument. This is reality. This is what happened to you. And I hope that people can be inspired by that story, by your story, and take that chance and that risk. You will actually come through on the other side much better off. And you're living proof of that, Joe.
Thanks, Mark. I mean, I think it helps to like do the work beforehand, because it's one thing just to even know what risk to take, right? To be able to hear what God is telling you to do, you know, it helps to do as much work as you can to be in as much alignment with who you actually are as possible, so that you know what direction to go.
Joe, what lessons have you learned during the pandemic that you want to share with our audience?
I think beyond what we've discussed, I mean, this pandemic has really opened my eyes up to the corruption of the pharmaceutical industry and the politicians who keep that status quo in place. You know, it's just been profound. You know, I mean, you guys saw that study out of Thailand recently that, you know, found a rate of 3% for clinical or subclinical myocarditis or pericarditis in adolescent boys. I mean, that study should have been done, you know, a year ago with 10 times the sample size, right? Like that is obviously the correct thing to do if you care about human beings, if you care about health. But the pharmaceutical industry's hold on politicians, you know, is just so, and of course, that's all based in their, you know, the God that they worship, which is money in terms of the pharmaceutical industry. That's all they care about ultimately. I mean, it's just, it's profound how dysfunctional things are and how people are trying to pass off as normal things that are absolutely abnormal. That lesson has sunk in, and I'm grateful for it.
Joe, last question. If Governor DeSantis one day would become president, would you consider becoming the U.S. Surgeon General?
You know, I would love to be that because I think it would be so great, right? You know, we had to just to be able to promote messages of health. I mean, a mask has never made anyone healthy, right? But you have this virus that is much worse for people who are obese, people who have hypertension, people who have diabetes. Did Dr. Fauci or the Vivek Murthy or whatever his last name is, did any of them utter anything about exercise, about your diet, you know, about vitamin D? Hey, maybe it's not settled science, but it's not going to hurt anyone and it might help. Nothing. Yeah. 2 years, nothing. So I think it would be a lot of fun to be able to promote public health, and well-being on an even, you know, bigger scale.
So hang on for a minute while we wrap up, and then we're going to ask you to reach out to Governor DeSantis so we can interview him on our podcast. So, Mark, great to be with you on another episode. Thank you so much for joining us.
Oh, thanks. Thanks, guys, for having me.
You've been listening to Informed Dissent with Dr. Jeff Barkey, board-certified primary care physician, and Dr. Mark McDonald, board-certified child, adolescent, and adult psychiatrist. Informed Dissent, the intersection of healthcare and politics.